Throughout the day, being pushed further and further back into the refugee camp, back into the city itself as well, while the Israeli forces are also trying to dig themselves in deeper into the camp. As I mentioned, they were taking over buildings and using these buildings to reach their rooftops in order to fire tear gas canisters and rubber-coated steel bullets at the protesters below. That's how it's been going on for the past hour, with the journalists trying to get a clear image of Israeli military forces have been pushing back any reporter, cameraman who ventures too close, keeping everybody at bay. In fact, ever since the day began, the Palestinian journalists and international journalists who are here as well have been cornered here near the checkpoint. They're not allowed to approach either the Israelis nor the protesters. They're just stuck in the middle, often being targeted by either the Palestinian protesters throwing stones or the Israeli forces firing tear gas canisters and rubber-coated steel bullets, making it much more difficult for us to actually cover the situation here. However, nonetheless, the reporters here are still maintaining their position, and every now and then you will see some people trying to approach either the soldiers' side or the protesters' side. Meanwhile, protests continue to rage across the West Bank in various Palestinian cities and villages. Palestinian villages participating today include Kfar Qaddoum and Nabi Saleh, as well as Bil'in and Nalin and other Palestinian villages that are known to participate in their popular struggle against the Israeli military occupation, as well as Palestinian cities, Nablus and Beit Lahem and Hebron, also known as Al-Khalil, where clashes haven't really stopped as of yet. The Palestinians all across the territories are angry at the American decision. They are outraged by the Israeli belligerence towards this situation and their actually arrogance in taking Jerusalem, of course, in the current policies that are being practiced in the city. So in essence, no one in the West Bank is willing to go back or fall back on these today's protests, and are willing to continue these protests tomorrow on Nakba Day.
Muhammad, looking at hindsight in these recent events and realizing the fact that these demonstrations are taking place simultaneously in the Gaza Strip and in the West Bank as well, would you say that these recent events have strengthened the resistance and further enhanced unity among Palestinians?
Well, yes, that's definitely the case that we've been seeing ever since Trump's announcement in December 7th. The Palestinians have actually formed a unified front, whether in the Gaza Strip or in the occupied West Bank. The Palestinians here, they're not looking for specific rights or bettering the situation of one group of Palestinians over the other. No, this is a national issue. This is an issue that many Palestinians feel close to, the issue of the city of Jerusalem. You can talk to many of the older Palestinians who will talk about the times before Israel had cordoned off the city from the Palestinian people and how they would go to the city for prayer or school or work. Nowadays, that doesn't happen. And so many of these Palestinians, their children who hadn't been able to see Jerusalem as much as their parents, are looking at the city and seeing that this opportunity has been lost to them and are now hitting the streets in unison, whether it's in the West Bank or in the Gaza Strip. This isn't just about one Palestinian group or a Palestinian faction over the other. This is an issue that the Palestinian people are adapting in whole, together, in unity. This is not about Hamas, it's not about Fatah. This is about the Palestinian people who are hitting the streets today, who are continuing these protests here in the West Bank. These people are showing up without any real guidance. They are here for things they themselves believe in. And you can even speak to some of these protesters, and they will all have different stories regarding Jerusalem al-Quds. They all have experiences pertaining to that city, and they all want to see that city. And they all want hope to see that city to be one day a capital of an independent Palestinian state. So that's the situation that the Palestinians are going through. Like I said, this is not an issue that is limited to one group of Palestinians over the other. This is a national cause, a national issue, and that's what we are seeing. That's what we are seeing across the occupied West Bank, with different Palestinians from different factions and walks of life participating in the protests. And we can say similar things about the protests in the Gaza Strip.
Thank you very much. That was our correspondent, Mohammed Hawail, joining us from the Ghalandia military checkpoint in the occupied West Bank. This just in, as a result of the at least 28 Palestinians that have been killed as a result of the Israeli live fire policy. The Palestinian government has stated that the Israelis are committing a terrible massacre in the Gaza Strip at this point. In the face of the live fire being used by the Israelis, we're seeing the demonstrators still pouring in, and the rallies are gaining even more and more momentum by the second in the Gaza Strip. Also, the rallies are taking place in the occupied West Bank as well. All of these demonstrations, dubbed a Day of Rage, are happening because of the U.S. relocation of its embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem on Al-Quds. To offer us more insight, we're now joined once again, by political commentator Mr. Ryan Dawson, who's joining us from Osaka. Mr. Dawson, welcome to the program. First of all, let's get your thoughts on the events that are taking place today.
Oh, it's absolutely disgusting that they've murdered 28 people so far. This is coming on top of course, 45 people they already murdered, snipers shooting people who got too close to the cage walls. And this just goes to show the plutocracy wins in the United States. Sheldon Adelson himself is practically paying for the embassy move. But really, the United States moving its embassy doesn't change the capital in Israel. It just shows that the U.S. is Israel's pet. That's all it's really proving. One nation moving, all the other embassies are still in Tel Aviv. The capital didn't move. But it's just a disgusting display that the United States is in the Zionist hand. And this goes dovetail straight in with squashing the Iran deal. It's really a blessing in disguise, because this is going to drive a wedge between European states and China versus the United States, because they all want to keep the deal. Nobody wanted to move the embassy. It's supposed to be an international city that's worked and been recognized, and everybody could predict what kind of violence would come of this, and we're seeing it now. 28 dead so far, with the Israelis just shooting unarmed civilians at will, and the international community will shake its finger, but there will be no real world consequences for their actions.
Director of Eurasia Future, Mr. Adam Gary, is also joining us again from the British capital, London. Mr. Gary, welcome to this segment once again. Before we lost you, we were speaking about the clear sense of global awareness now towards the Palestinian cause. I'd like to get your thoughts on the issue now, as we're seeing demonstrations taking place, not just in the occupied Palestinian territories, but also following the decision by the United States calling Jerusalem al-Quds the capital of Israel. We saw a number of cities across the globe see their fair share of demonstrations in support of the Palestinian cause.
Well, in terms of what one calls soft power perceptions, and in terms of the informational side of the struggle for Palestinian liberation, it really is the best of times and the worst of times all at once. Half of the world is being increasingly illuminated as to the savagery of the occupier entity and the true selfless struggle of the Palestinians, who for 70 years have suffered under the iron boot of Zionist bloodletting. The other half of the world is increasingly retreating into what one perversely can call blissful ignorance, in respect of the fact that in many places people have just assumed that the occupier entity is here to stay and will be here to stay tomorrow, and that therefore any resistance in their own minds is futile. Not that they'd ever do anything in terms of actual resistance, but in terms of the psychological element. Things, however, are going to reach a breaking point, and the reason is because pictures speak far louder than words, and the technology that is available in Palestine and that can be now projected throughout the entire world is more pervasive than at any time since the beginning of the occupier entity's Nakba against the Palestinian nation and the wider Arab world. Because of this, it will be difficult to shut up the voices who support Palestine when they see the pictures of the fully exposed brutality of the regime. And I believe that it's going to be that which is going to be the breaking point. The ordinary person in any country in the world doesn't have time to read treatises about philosophy. They don't have time to read about history. Some don't even have time to read the commentary about current events. But everyone has time to see pictures. And human nature dictates that the most barbarous images will catch the eyes first. The images coming out of occupied Palestine are among the most barbarous in modern history, and people will then begin to realize that the regime that they've either supported or ignored is indeed meting out barbarism. And while few in, let's say, Norway or Thailand or Australia might feel the need to become instant Palestine supporters, they will instantly understand that the occupier entity isn't worth supporting in any way, because no one of conscience could support such barbarity, even if they don't have the energy within them to support Palestine. So in this sense, we are approaching a breaking point very soon, and a lot of it is because of the liberating and democratic power that technology has. That's why the old regimes who have erstwhile controlled the international dialogue are so keen to shut the technology down, because once the cat is proverbially out of the bag, there's no shutting the lid on Pandora's box.
Indeed. So mass rallies are taking place in Palestinian territories to denounce the U.S.'s relocation of its embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Al-Quds. At least 28 Palestinians have been killed as a result of the Israeli live fire and shoot to kill policy being carried out against the demonstrators along the so-called buffer zone in the Gaza Strip along the occupied Palestinian territories. Mr. Dawson from Osaka, all of this is happening on the eve of the Nakba Day, or the Catastrophe Day commemorations. This is making the Nakba Day no ordinary commemoration, as it's following the relocation of the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem, Al-Quds. Many believe that the policies and the decisions that the Trump administration has administered are serving as a final nail in the coffin of the U.S.'s policy in the Middle East. Do you see it in that light as well?
Yes, there's no doubt the Trump administration has met every Zionist demand. They canceled the Iran deal. They moved the embassy to Jerusalem, which many presidents gave lip service to. As strong as AIPAC is, as strong as the Israeli lobby is in the United States, you saw the Bushes, you saw Clinton, you saw Obama say they would move it, but never actually did because of the international consequences and this just flat immorality and stupidity of it. But the Trump administration, with Kushner in his ear especially, has been more than willing to capitulate to Israel's demand on this and many other Israeli demands across the board. And it will have consequences. They've overplayed their hand. They've bitten off more than they can chew. And you can see the writing on the wall. They've been attacking Syria as well. And this is all going to culminate, and it's not going to be good for Israel.
Mr. Gary, our guest in Osaka, spoke of consequences for the U.S. administration and for the Israeli regime. What do you think the consequences will be?
Consequences for the regime are going to be that the Palestinians who were bathing in treachery for several decades will now have no other choice but to embrace an all or nothing mindset when it comes to liberation. As I was saying earlier, I must reiterate, a South African style one state solution is the only answer, where every man and every woman has a single vote in a constitutionally pluralistic democracy, much as as the land of Palestine was prior to the Nakba, when both under the Ottoman Empire and under the Arab Caliphates before it and under the Byzantine Greeks before it, people of all different ethno-confessional backgrounds lived side by side throughout the Levant. So the idea that Palestine is necessarily a hostile place is a very, very recent phenomenon when one considers the ancient pedigree of that holy place. And so what's necessary is to frankly turn the clock back to an era of sanity, to an era of intercommunal harmony, to an era where the issues that are decided governmentally are done at a local level rather than a geopolitical, essentially car crash, which is what we see going on right now. So the consequences for Palestinians will be that eventually they will have to wake up to this reality. While Palestinian factions remain very unfortunately divided, and while many Palestinian leaders don't, in my opinion, have the best interest of their own state in mind, the people will eventually coalesce, and we're already seeing that the Palestinian leaders themselves now have already rejected a future role for US mediation in the future. And I'll again reiterate, what's necessary is multilateral mediation from every major and medium-sized power, from every bloc of nation, from ASEAN to the Eurasian Economic Union to the African Union. This needs to be a collective effort, because only then will voices from throughout the world be heard. In terms of the United States, the biggest consequence has been that the U.S. is losing its ability to influence the region. Even the occupier entity itself now needs Russia more than it needs the United States, because, of course, both the U.S. and Russia are allies of the Zionist regime, but in very different ways. Russia is able, because of its good relations with every single nation in the Middle East, from Iran to Saudi Arabia, from Syria to Turkey, from Israel to Palestine, from Egypt to Qatar, Russia is able to mediate in disputes from some position of legitimacy, because everyone has something to gain and lose if they were to shift their positive relationship with Russia. Because the US has played a zero-sum game in the Middle East for so long, the US can't do much for Israel other than go to wars for Israel, and it's already exhausted most of those possibilities. That particular steam train ends at Iran, because John Bolton, the bloodthirsty war maniac himself, has indicated that the US war against Iran will be economic rather than military. So it's the end of the line. Now all they can do is provoke Palestine with heinous things such as the moving of the embassy. But beyond that, the US has run out of steam when it comes to helping its occupier friend. All of these things will in the next few years coalesce to shift the situation in the Middle East. And while some, including myself, look at that with a bit of optimism, the sad fact is that nothing can be positive when Palestinians are dying. I believe the number is now close to 30, perhaps more. You can correct me on that, in terms of Palestinians martyred in the last several hours. This is the biggest human rights disaster in modern history, and the world itself has shown that modern governments, much like their older predecessors, don't actually care about human rights. They care about interests. But when these geopolitical interests and actual human rights considerations collide, and at some point they will, then things will really begin to change in a meaningful way in Palestine.
Thank you, Mr. Gary. Let's cross over now to Youssef Al-Haylou, journalist and political commentator, who's joining us now from London. Mr. Al-Haylou, welcome to the program. Let's start off with your thoughts about the events that are taking place today.
Well, what we are experiencing right now across the occupied Palestinian territories, especially in Gaza, is unprecedented phase in the conflict against the Israeli occupation forces, against the Israeli occupation that has been going on for the past 70 years. Now, we are seeing chains of humans, chains of people along the Gaza fence protesting against the Nakba, the catastrophe of 1948. The number is on the rise. Israeli occupation forces have threatened to open fire and kill Palestinians. It's called shoot to kill policy, as we have been experiencing this since the 30th of March, marking the land day. It seems that the Palestinians are adamant to call for the right of return. What we are seeing now, people on the ground facing live ammunition, unarmed protesters marching towards the border to send a clear message that nothing will break their will. They will not give up the right to return. They have the right to live, go back into the ancestors, to the homes and towns of their ancestors who were forced to flee back in 1948. Gaza is known the world's largest open-air prison, unprecedented levels of poverty, unemployment, despair prevails again amongst the population of nearly 2 million people. Half of them are young people below the age of 18. Two-thirds of Gaza population are descendants of refugees, and that's why we can analyze and this is the reason why we are seeing these unarmed protesters risking their lives. Some say it's a massacre, some say it's genocidal atrocities perpetrated against the Palestinian people, but it's a mass killing against unarmed protesters. Some say that the Palestinians are putting themselves at risk despite the fact knowing that they will be gunned down. But at the end of the day, if you ask them why you are protesting, they say we have nothing to lose. More than 11 years of crippling, illegal, tight siege, Israel restricts the movement of people, restricts the imports and exports out of Gaza. Fishermen come under fire, farmers come under fire. The land border crossings, the airspace, territorial waters of Gaza have been under Israeli control, despite the fact claiming that the Israeli occupation forces left Gaza in 2005. So it's an ongoing popular uprising against the practices of the Israeli regime. It coincides with the relocation of the embassy. It's an insult. Actually, Palestinians say that the American administration, it chose to relocate their embassy to Jerusalem on this day just to cause even more pain and to, you know, to bring the Palestinians to their knees and say, look, if you are against the United States, then we will not care about you. And we have been seeing that the peace talks have failed after nearly 25 years of talks between the Palestinian Authority led by Mahmoud Abbas and the Americans, the Israelis. What we are seeing now, if we need to analyze the silence and complicity of the international community, it's because of the clear and obvious normalization between Arab countries and the Israeli regime. So that's why the Palestinians now are squeezed to the corner. Either accept to consider your rights and accept the realities on the ground, or you will be isolated. So the Palestinians in Gaza has been isolated for the past 11 years. Even the Palestinians in the West Bank, who are also experiencing harsh measures against by the Israeli forces, 600 border blocks, the annexation of land, the building of the apartheid wall, arrest campaigns day and night. So all of these measures are aimed at bringing the Palestinians to their knees in order to force them to raise the white flag and accept their realities on the ground. But the Palestinians say it's our right, it's a legitimate right to fight the occupation, and we have nothing to lose. Give us our rights, at least recognize our right to exist on the remaining 20% of historic Palestine. So Palestinians, they don't believe in the so-called peace process. They are hopeless, especially in Gaza. I mean, there is no bright future. That's why you see most of the protesters are young people who have no future. The future is bleak in Gaza. And we are hearing just now Israeli occupation forces threatening to wage an all-out attack against Gaza by selecting some targets to cause panic if the protests continue. So in light of this silence, on part of the international community, it seems the Palestinians will have to suffer. And we don't know how many more Palestinians have to risk their lives or how many more Palestinians have to be killed in order to shake the awakening or the conscience of the people. But the Palestinians, they say, we don't rely on Arab regimes. We don't rely on the so-called international community represented by the superpowers of the world, or the UN at least. We rely on the freedom-loving people, people of conscience, to mobilize and take action. And we are seeing demonstrations taking place across at capitals across the world to show solidarity with the Palestinians of Gaza. Let's hope this bloody day will end without more casualties.
And Mr. Al-Halu, how has an insufficient Arab response contributed to what we're seeing right now?
It plays a major role. Obviously, if there is an intervention on part of the Arab regimes, we will see at least some pressure mounting on the Israeli side. So, I mean, the Arab regimes are blamed by the vast majority of the Palestinians, especially neighboring Egypt that has diplomatic ties with the Israeli regime, Jordan, as well as Saudi Arabia. Palestinians are dismayed by this kind of apathy and silence on part of these regimes.
And let's also take that question to Mr. Dawson in Osaka. We were focusing on the lack of response, not just a unified response, but any response from the Arab world with regards to events that we're seeing right now.
Well, with regards to Egypt, they've been traditionally paid off. That's even before when Mubarak was in charge. They always were the second largest aid recipient from the United States, paid to look the other way, paid to close the border crossing. Even when they're facing no electricity in Gaza, they'd shut down the grids. So their palms are greased just as well. And so that's why it's up to the international community to see that, look, a lot of these neighboring regimes, you know, just being Arab, having the same ethnicity doesn't mean just automatically you're going to do the right and moral thing. They have a lot of political corruption and a lot of bribery and pressure from the United States mainly as well. And so that is why private organizations, universities, etc., internationally, from Japan to America, should be boycotting and divesting from Israel and putting economic pressure on the system. Because you can do that without having to appeal to a state body. The U.S. should be removed from any negotiations. Abbas is, he's the kind of opposition they want. He's paid off. He looks the other way. They're not representing the people. You can't look to government to solve your problems. People have to solve their own problems, and there are a lot of methods other than appealing to authority that's just going to be plutocratically bought off the way it is in the West Bank, as well as even in the United States. A lot of Americans didn't want to move the embassy either. If you do polls of young Jews in America too, they're against these Israeli policies as well. But they're done against the will of the people because we're not represented, despite saying we have representative government. Money is represented. But we can boycott and divest. Churches can do it. Universities can do it. And that does have an impact. It had an impact on South Africa. That's what got the ball rolling. Before the states got behind it, there was a populist movement. And that's something when people see these sickening pictures of young men and women being shot through the knees and the eyeballs, shot in the groin, or straight up shot through the face and killed. And they see this, what are they, throwing stones at people with machine guns? This is Manifest Destiny 2.0, except it's in 2018, not 200 years ago. And it's utterly disgusting. And the world's not going to stomach this. It won't be on U.S. media, three-letter networks, and that is going to discredit them. We all know it's not going to be on CNN, ABC, Fox, etc. They never cover it when people from Gaza are murdered by snipers. Never. It won't be in the major papers in the United States, but it's going to be all over the online media, and it will be all over the international media. And there are a lot more people that live outside the U.S. than inside the U.S., and there are a lot of people in the U.S. that get online and get news as well. And they need to boycott and divest. That's the answer.
Mr. Ahu, our guest in Osaka, Mr. Dawson, believes that it's appalling the Western media does not in any form cover the violence that the Israelis carry out against the Palestinians on a day-to-day basis. What are your thoughts on that?
It's sad. Palestinians say that the Western media outlets are biased when it comes to the coverage of their narrative. This has been obvious for the past years, during the major wars that Israel launched in 2008, 2012, 2014, and nowadays it seems that Gaza is no longer a priority to the international community. The U.S. administration given Israel a green light to deal with Gaza, to crush the resistance, to crush, to shut the Palestinians' voices, to do whatever it likes. So that's why we see there is a growing anger amongst Palestinians who take to the social media platforms such as Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, whatever other available means in order to make their voices heard worldwide. We see that they are being followed by some supporters across the world. We see that the videos emerging from the ground, civilians and armed people gunned down like sitting ducks by Israeli occupation forces are spread all over the world thanks to these citizen journalists on the ground. And it's embarrassing that what some of the media outlets claim to be transparent and neutral, credible, objective, they ignore the human suffering. It's not about shots or rockets fired from Gaza to Israel. It's about a human story that has been neglected for the past 70 years, seven decades of expulsion, dispossession. People have been living in miserable conditions at refugee camps across the Arab world, across the world, in miserable conditions. And these people have only got one demand, to return to their ancestors' homes and towns. So at the end of the day, the Palestinians are not going to vanish like Native Americans. This is what all Palestinians say. They are there to stay. Israel was hoping that the Palestinian refugees or Palestinians in general would forget about this sacred right, the right to return. But Palestinians, 70 years on, they say loud and clear that we will never relinquish our right to return.
Mr. Ahilu, do you think the Trump administration underestimated how sensitive and emotional the issue of Al-Quds is for Palestinians?
I mean, the U.S. administration has been always in support of Israel. So Trump or anyone in the White House has no regard to the Palestinian suffering or story. It knows that Palestinians would rise up and stage demonstrations, even in some Arab countries worldwide. But they were hoping that by the time the embassy is relocated to Jerusalem, these demonstrations will come to an end. It's not about it underestimated the response. The U.S., I mean, it does what it wants. It's a superpower, and it knows that Arab regimes are in its pocket. It knows that Israel is a powerful force on the ground, planted in the Arab world. And at the end of the day, the U.S. is one of the five permanent members at the U.S. Security Council. So many UN revolutions were vetoed by the U.S. And if the Palestinians, even Abbas himself, I mean, he chose to boycott the peace talks, is being pressured by the U.S. administration to resume the peace talks. He decided to cut ties with the U.S. administration. The U.S. retaliated by refusing to renew the license of the PLO office in Washington. So we are seeing reprisal steps taken on part of the U.S. administration, even against Abbas himself, who was being described a very moderate that who made many concessions in favor of Israel. These protests are at least it's symbolic. You know, it sends a message to the outside world that the Palestinians they have a just cause. They are fighting for a just cause. Let the whole world decide and bring an end to this tragedy, to this agony of the Palestinians, especially those in Gaza who lack even healthy drinking water. Daily power cuts for up to 20 hours a day for the past 10 years. It's a pressure cooker.
Right.
Palestinians deserve to have a decent life.
Thank you very much, journalist and political commentator Mr. Yusuf Al-Hilu, joining us from London. We're now going to cross over to our correspondent Halal Safadi in Gaza with the segment focusing on today's events.
Hello and welcome to Press TV's special coverage of today's rallies in Gaza held against the relocation of the American embassy from Tel Aviv.
Thank you very much. Thank you for that. Thank you.
No problem. I'll have more coming.